Canto 7, Chapter 13. The Behavior of a Saintly Person. Sri Narada said, "Someone capable of what I described before should wander around from place to place without any form of material attachment and, ultimately, with nothing but his body, not stay in any village longer than a single night. If the renunciate sannyasi wears clothing at all, it should be nothing but some covering for his private parts. Except for in case of distress, he should not take to matters he has given up. He normally is characterized by nothing but the marks of renunciation, his rod and such. With Narayana as his refuge, he, living on alms only, satisfied within, all alone and not depending on anyone or anything, moves around in perfect peace as a well-wisher to all living beings. He should see this universe of cause and effect as existing within the everlasting self in the beyond and see the Supreme Absolute itself as pervading the world of cause and effect everywhere. The soul moves from waking to sleeping to the dreaming in between. Because of that, someone of self-awareness considers the states of being bound, of being conditioned, and being liberated as in fact being nothing but an illusion. He should not rejoice in the certainty of the death of the body, nor in the uncertainty of its life. He instead should observe the supreme command of time that rules the manifestation and disappearance of all living beings. He, the renunciate, should not be fixed on time-bound literatures, nor depend on a career. Accusations and pedantry he should give up, and he should not side with group-bound conjecture, opinion, and speculation, politics. He should not seek followers, nor should he engage in diverse literary exercises or read such writings. He should not subsist on lecturing, nor set up an enterprise. A peaceful and equal-minded renunciate does not necessarily have to adopt the symbols of his spiritual position. He, as a great soul, may just as well abandon them. Even though he externally may not directly be recognized as a renunciate, he is clear in his purpose. Such a saintly person may feel the need to present himself in society like a restless youth, or, having been a scholar, present himself as a less intelligent man. As an example of such a hidden identity, one often recites a very old story about a conversation between Prahlada and a saintly man who lived like a python. Prahlada, the favorite of the Supreme Lord, once met such a saint when he, with a few royal associates, was traveling around the world in an effort to understand the motives of the people. At the bank of the Kaveri River, on a slope of the mountain Sahya, he witnessed the purity and profundity of the spiritual radiance of a man who was lying on the ground with his entire body covered with dirt and dust. From what he did, how he looked, from what he said, as also by his age, occupation, and other marks of identity, the people could not decide whether or not that man was someone they knew. After paying his respects and honoring him by, according to the rules, touching his lotus feet with his head, the great Asura devotee of the Lord, eager to know him, asked the following question. "I see you are maintaining quite a fat body, like you are someone eager for money. People who always worry about an income are surely of sense gratification. Wealthy people, they who enjoy this world and think of nothing else, therefore easily become as fat as this body of yours. You, lying down, doing nothing, O man of the spirit, clearly have no money for sense enjoyment. How can, without you enjoying your senses, your body be this fat, O learned one? Excuse me for asking this, but can you please tell us that? Despite your being so learned, skilled, and intelligent, and your talent to speak nicely, and your inner balance, you lie down observing how the people are engaged in their work. Sri Narada said. The great saint, thus being questioned by the Daitya king, smiled at him and was, captivated by the beauty and love of his words, willing to reply. The Brahmin said, O best of the Asuras, you who are appreciated by all civilized men, know from your transcendental vision all about the matters people during their lifetime are inclined to and turn away from. With Narayana Deva, our Lord, always present in one's heart, someone by his devotion alone will shake off all ignorance, the way darkness is dispelled by the sun. Nevertheless, I will try to answer all your questions according to what I have heard from the sages and their scriptures, O King. For you, as someone desiring the purification of the self, deserves it to be addressed. Under the influence of worldly interests, I myself have catered to one material desire after the other, and was perforce impelled to perform actions that tied me to different types of birth. After I, because of my karma, had wandered from the heavenly gate of liberation to lower species of life, I unexpectedly acquired this human position again. But, seeing how one in that position, always acting for the avoidance of misery and for the sake of the pleasure that men and women have, achieves the opposite, I have terminated those activities. To be happy is the natural position of the soul, and to put an end to all material activities constitutes the cause of the manifestation of this happiness. Having understood that sense enjoyment follows from fostering desires, I am now lying here slumbering silently. Someone situated in this world gets, because of its attraction, entangled in oppositions that make him afraid of a repeated worldly existence, and because of this duality of his material ego, he forgets about the interest of his heart and soul, his true nature of happiness. Just like a thirsty animal that, failing to notice water overgrown by grass, ignorantly looks for it elsewhere, also someone who is thirsty for his material interest, but fails to see the happiness of his true self, runs after a mirage of that happiness. Someone who, with his body and everything belonging to it, is subjected to the superior control of the material world, searches for the happiness of the soul by trying to diminish his misery by material means, but not meditating on the true happiness, being completely powerless, he time and again is disappointed in his plans and actions. And if he sometimes happens to succeed, of what use would the incidental success of fighting adverse consequences be to a mortal person who is not free from the threefold miseries as created by himself, by others, and by nature? Where do such successes lead to? What is their value? I see the miseries of the greedy rich and wealthy. As a victim of their senses, they, in their fear, have sleepless nights in which they see danger coming from all sides. He who lives for the money is always afraid of the government, of thieves, of enemies, relatives, animals and birds, of beggars, of time, and of himself. Someone intelligent has to forsake the original cause leading to all lamentation, illusion, fear, anger, attachment, poverty, toiling, and so on of the human being, the desire for power and wealth. The working bees and the big snakes in this world are in this matter our first-class gurus. From what they teach, we find the satisfaction of being happy as one is, and the renunciation of not seeking things elsewhere. I learned from the honeybee to detach from all desires. The money, you as honey like a bee have collected with great difficulty, is by someone else taken away again, in the process of which the owner is eventually killed. Enduring like a python, lying down for many days, I am satisfied with the soul without endeavor, and not interested in acquiring possessions. Sometimes I eat little, sometimes I eat a lot of food, that sometimes is fresh and sometimes is stale, that sometimes is palatable and sometimes is tasteless. Sometimes food is brought to me with respect, and sometimes it is offered with disrespect. Thus I eat during the night or else during the day, whenever it is available. Spiritually satisfied, I am clothed in whatever destiny offers me, be it linen, silk or cotton, deerskin, a loincloth, bark or whatever material. Sometimes I lie down on the earth, on grass, on leaves, on stone or on a pile of ash, and sometimes, when someone wishes me to, I lie down in a palace on a first-class bed with pillows. Sometimes I bathe nicely, smear my body with sandalwood paste, properly dress, wear garlands and various ornaments, and sit on a chariot, an elephant, or the back of a horse. And sometimes I wander around completely naked as if haunted by a ghost, O Mighty One. I do not curse the people, nor praise them, all having a different nature. I pray for the ultimate benefit of everyone that is found in the oneness of the greater soul. The notion of discrimination should be offered as an oblation in the fire of consciousness. Consciousness should be offered in the fire of the mind, and the mind, that is the root of all confusion, must be offered in the fire of the false self. That variable ego should, following this principle, be offered in the complete of the material energy. A mindful person, for the sake of his self-realization, in respect of the truth, should offer the complete of his material energy as an oblation. When he thus has lost his interest in the world, he must, thus being situated in his essence, in his true self, remain completely aloof. This story about myself I now submit to you this way in utter confidence. But it might be so that you, from the side of your good self, as a man of transcendence with the Supreme Lord, find it contrary to the customary scriptural explanation. Sri Narada said, thus having heard from the holy man about the Dharma of the Paramahamsas, the Asura Lord, most pleased, after duly honoring him, took leave and returned home.